And once the remission came, you know, the doctor began to have the conversations about the bone marrow transplant. And at this point, he was stating to me that he felt, you know, good about everything that I've gone through thus far. And he said that he thought that based on statistics, he felt like it would be much lower of a return if I did a bone marrow transplant. And so he said, now, this is the thing. There is a low number of donors within the African-American community. And I'm going to tell you something. I was still kind of ignorant of the, I don't know if I need to use that word, not as knowledgeable. Let me say that. Not as knowledgeable about how everything looked as far as having a donor for this procedure. So I didn't even think of the seriousness of if I didn't get a donor, if I went through this process and was not going to be able to get a donor, what it could potentially do to my lifespan or a potential lifespan.
Welcome to Black Blood Heals from Be The Match, the most diverse bone marrow registry in the world. Tune in each week as I share tools and resources on ways you can be a change agent and save a life in your community. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Black Blood Heals. I am your host, Tamara Weston, and today we are going to talk about second chances. Luke chapter 12, verse 48 of the King James Version states, "For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall be much required, and to whom men have committed much of him, they will ask the more." Now, don't be mistaken or get it twisted. We are not about to go to church, but if you have not heard that verse in its entirety, you probably have heard the shortened version, which is simply, "To whom much is given, much is required." Now, what does that mean? It means that if our lives have been positively impacted by blessings, gifts, or life-changing opportunities, then we should use those blessings, gifts, and opportunities as foundation to provide the same or equal benefit for others. This can manifest itself in a number of different ways, from simply being thankful for what you have been given or received, to sharing your story or journey to make an impact on the world around you. Today, I'm joined by Jermaine Reed, who was given a second chance of life through a bone marrow transplant. Welcome, Jermaine. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much, Tamara. I'm excited to be joining you today to help bring awareness and share my story and all that good stuff. So it's exciting.
As you always do. And I thank you for joining me today. Thank you for being here and being willing to share your story and once again, hopefully inspire through your words and your truth. Before we get started, how are you? How's it going? How have things been since your transplant?
Oh my God. It's been very busy since transplant. I mean, you're talking like 13 years ago. So it's really amazing when I even say that. I was thinking about when I was going to get on with you and how long it's been. And I can recall seeing someone when I was going through treatment and how they said that they were 6 years out. So Someone that may hear this and hear 13 years out. Oh my God. I can only imagine the encouragement they'll get just from hearing that. So
I love it.
With our daughter playing travel volleyball. So my wife and I are staying busy. You know, I work in the medical field now. Can you believe this? I'm in a medical field.
Full circle.
Yeah, helping prevent infectious disease. And, you know, it's crazy how everything came around full circle, like you just mentioned. So, you know, just to jump in a little bit, those of you don't know me or have ever even heard of me, I am Jermaine Reed. I'm married to Dana Reed. Been married this year 25 years.
Woo!
We have three kids. We have Ethan is our oldest son. He is 24, or he'll be 24 this year. And then our second son is Jalen. He's 20 years old. And our daughter is Leah, and she is 15 years old. So imagine those numbers I just set out, right? Mm-hmm. Well, 13 years ago, in January of 2010, I was diagnosed with AML leukemia. Mm. So imagine hearing the ages that my kids are now. At that time, each one of them was under 12 years old.
Wow.
And under 12, technically, they could not come and see me at the hospital. Mm. So that's in itself to be where we are now. I'm very humbled and I am very grateful. So that's just to kind of set the stage of, you know, who's talking, who's sharing their story.
I appreciate that. And I think just the mere fact of telling that portion of your life shows the value in being given a second chance, because as you noted, all three of your children were under 12. And who knows what would have happened had you not gotten the bone marrow transplant. So I definitely want to get into your story. But before we do that, I want to let the audience know that you and I have spoken several times over the last couple of years. We met through both of our engagement with Be The Match. And I can honestly say that throughout our conversations on the several times that we have spoken and that I've heard you speak, your story remains consistent. So whether you are sharing your story with our friends at Rolling Out Magazine, at an open forum where you've been invited as a guest speaker, or at an event, a recruitment event that you freely join us at from time to time, you share your story, as you just said, humbly, with passion, gratitude, and appreciation. I mean, you bundle all of that up as you tell it. And you inspire people to think about the possibilities, the what ifs, or the what if nots.
Yeah.
And as I started off the show, to whom much is given, much is required. And you've been given that second chance, and you've taken that, and you've now stepped up to the plate to now become an advocate, to become a change agent, to become an inspiring influence on those that may still be a little bit on the fence about whether to join the registry or whether not to join the registry, or even to remain committed if they are currently on the registry, and to answer that call. So with that, I want to definitely give a halt and just say thank you. Thank you for not only inspiring me with your story, but inspiring all of those who may not have an opportunity to be as vocal as I am. So thank you. And with that, let's absolutely jump into how we got here. You just said that you were diagnosed 13 years ago, or you had a transplant 13 years ago for AML. Let's go back a little bit before that. When did you discover, or when were you told that you had AML?
Wow. Well, it was January of 2010. And, you know, slightly before that, in 2009, you know, being a family man like I am, I was playing in a teachers versus parents basketball game at my son's school. And I had not really played ball in a minute. So, you know, I kind of experienced some fatigue. And I thought, oh, man, I'm out of shape, man. I'm out of shape bad. You know, this is crazy, you know. And so it was kind of unusual. And then I started noticing some things and, you know, just some signs. You know, your body will talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us African-Americans, you know, we, especially men, we won't go to the doctor to get a checkup. So that checkup actually saved my life. That's the first part. My decision to go to the doctor is the thing that helped to save my life, because, you know, they told me when I went to the doctor's office, they told me they couldn't see me for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, when was the last time I was here? They said, it actually has been 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I said, nah, I got to see somebody. And I'm so grateful that I had already done some research and went to another doctor's office. They said that they could see me that Monday. It was a Friday that I went. I went on Monday to have all the physicals done and all those things. I just wanted to know what was going on. I didn't think it was cancer. I just thought, hey, man, I got something going on. I need to address this. And when they told me that they needed to see me again, I had to come back down to the doctor's office. It was around my blood work being abnormal. And I still wasn't really alarmed. I said, okay, I'll come back down. I went back down, got it done. And the very next day, they said, Mr. Reed, you need to come back down They wouldn't tell me what it was. They just said, you need to come see us. And as soon as I got there, they told me, they said, hey, look, your blood work came back. You know, your white blood cell counts is out the roof. Your platelets is at like a 12 or something like that. And they said, you may have lymphoma or leukemia. And Tamara, to be honest with you, when I heard that, I knew that was serious. But the first thing that hit my mentality was, I don't care what this is, I'm not going to die. That was one of the first things. And the other thing about it was I had heard some sermons before that I listened to religiously all the time. I was always a person who, you know, listened. And this came up in my thinking. It says, your first reaction to good or bad news will be the determining factor of your victory or defeat. So I had already
said that again, Jermaine. That was powerful right there. Yes, please repeat that.
Yeah, well, it came to my thoughts right around that time when they were sharing that with me, that your first reaction to good or bad news will be the determining factor of your victory or defeat. And I had said, oh, man, I don't care what this is. I ain't dying. There ain't no way I'm about to die. And so, you know, I just said, OK, let me make a few calls. I made some calls. I had a cousin that was a director of medicine at Emory. And they're telling me you got to report to Northside Bone Marrow Transplant Unit immediately. And so I just got in my car, you know, and I'm headed home to get some things. And Northside Hospital calls me and says, hey, we've received a referral from your doctor's office. We understand that you're headed this way. I said, well, I'm going home to grab some stuff. And they were like, no, report now. That's when it began to kind of hit me a little bit, like, oh, okay, this is about to be a journey. And I made a few calls, like I said, and I really wasn't totally aware of anything about bone marrow transplant, nothing. All I was thinking was, whatever this is, we're about to ride this out and do what we need to do, and I'm gonna get back to work, I'm gonna get back to my life, all that. Not knowing the significance of what I was about to go through. So
I'm like sitting at like a scary movie. I'm on the edge of my seat. Like, what does that mean? You had to get to the hospital right away. Did the doctors tell you, did they walk you through before they put, you know, and let's just be clear with it, the fear, did they put the fear in you? Let me rephrase that. After they put the fear in you, did they walk you through what was happening? Or did they just say, you know what, you need to get to Northside. When you get to Northside, we'll tell you what's happening. Or did the doctor that diagnosed you walk you through and tell you what AML is? Did they tell you or give you an understanding verbally of the seriousness? You noted that you didn't realize that until they said, nope, you got to get here now. Yeah. But did anyone say to you, sir, this is what's happening? No. And this is what we need to do.
No, they did not tell me the significance, not at the doctor's office. And until I got there to Northside and they began the biopsy process, you know, because at the doctor's office, it was just mainly blood work. But once I got to the hospital, mm-hmm. now they have to initiate the biopsy. And I had no idea now that they were going to have to, you know, do the procedure that they do where as a patient, they're going through the pelvic bone. Right. But I'm going to tell you something. I wasn't even thinking about pain. I was thinking about knowing what is this? Mm-hmm. I know that's kind of, it sounds kind of hard to say, but I could care less about the pain. I was like, whatever you got to do, let's do this. You know what I mean? And I think when they came in, it was a team of doctors that came in. And at this point, you know, I only have a gown on and they're looking at my body from top to bottom and they're not noticing any major bruises or anything like that. They were just like, what made you go to the doctor? Because you made like a really good decision. You know what I mean? And I just kind of shared with them, you know, kind of what I just shared with you. And I just said, hey, I noticed some extreme fatigue. I mean, I didn't have any stamina. A lot of boxes that I was checking because I was 38 years old at this time, approaching 40. And I'm like, man, that's kind of what I was thinking too. Is this what happened when you get 40? You know, and I'm just like, oh my God, man. And I don't mean to, you know, I'm trying to bring some humor to this a little bit because whoever's out there, patient-wise, that has been diagnosed, I know you probably thought some of the same things if you're around that 30s age-wise, I mean, close to 40. So I wasn't really experiencing fear at that point. The early part was not necessarily the fear part. I think the longer, because I was doing things like as though I was not sick. You know what I'm saying? because it took a moment for it to really sink in that I'm about to go on a journey. Mm-hmm. So the longer you go on the journey, the more intense it gets, because now you're becoming more knowledgeable mm-hmm. about what you're facing, mm-hmm. the disease of, you know, mm-hmm. I had no idea about a bone marrow transplant, what it requires. I had, you know, like we say all the time in a bunch of our drives, until it happens to you, you don't have any idea.
You don't have any idea. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So when we think about your initial communication, when we think about the examinations that you went through, and then they begin to, you know, walk you through what your condition was and, you know, how they could cure it or how it, you know, they can manage it. Tell us about when they started talking about the bone marrow transplant. Like, how did that conversation come
up? Okay. I went through several stages of heavy dose chemo, and I came into a quick remission. And once the remission came, you know, the doctor began to have the conversations about the bone marrow transplant. And at this point, he was stating to me that he felt, you know, good about everything that I've gone through thus far. And he said that he thought that based on statistics, he felt like it would be much lower of a return if I did a bone marrow transplant. And so he said, now, this is the thing. There is a low number of donors within the African-American community. And I'm going to tell you something. I was still kind of ignorant of the, I don't know if I need to use that word, not as knowledgeable. Let me say that. Not as knowledgeable about how everything looked as far as having a donor for this procedure. So I didn't even think of the seriousness of if I didn't get a donor, if I went through this process and was not going to be able to get a donor, what it could potentially do to my lifespan or a potential lifespan. All I did was I just decided, you know, if that's the case, yeah, we want to do that. I don't remember us thinking about it a long time. We just said we want to do it.
So you were diagnosed in January. Yep. You immediately began treatment. You went through chemo. So from the time that you were diagnosed in January, how long was it before they were able to find you a donor?
That's a great question. So I got diagnosed in the middle of January. I went through the heavy dose chemo throughout February. So March is when I was told, around late February, early March, about transplant. And amazingly, they found one match. I want to say it had to be sometime in March or either February. It didn't even take 30 to 60 days, which was amazing. Okay. It was a 9 out of 10 match. And then they found a second one. Wow. They found a second one that was a 9 out of 10 match. None related donor. Okay. And I went with the second one. He was younger. I was like, I want that one. You know, that's the one I want. And boy, there's so much I can say about this. I just want it to be so effective for the hearer, for the one who might be going through this thing. The main thing is I'm thankful for all the procedures and the doctors and the nurses and everyone that played a part in my second opportunity at life. But I must always say that my mindset through the spiritual realm is what really, really helped me. And not to get, like you said in your opening, not to get churchy or anything like that, but there were so many things that I thought about when you go through those points of isolation. Because when you go through AML or any kind of blood cancer or sickle cell or whatnot, when you go through those treatments, there's a lot of lonely days. There's a lot of days of isolation. There's a lot of days where people have to come to see you with sterile gowns on and things of that nature as you're in a bone marrow transplant unit. And those are the days where you can have anxiety. And anxiety can be overwhelming. So I relied on passages like honoring your father and your mother, right? Where your days shall be long on the earth. A lot of times I had those type conversations with God. Like, Lord, wait a minute, this is kind of unusual. It's like, scripturally, it says that if I honor my father and my mother, long shall my days be on this earth. So I would talk to God about those kind of things. And I had confidence when I was talking to him. That's another key. Because I really believe that the way that we think it kind of messes around with our chemistry and our blood. You know, I met someone, and I really feel like this is one of the reasons why I went through what I went through. I met someone the second day that I was in the hospital. That first day, a nurse comes to me and says, "Mr. Reed, are you a basketball player?" And I said, "I used to play a little ball in high school." She said, "I have a patient that thought you were a professional basketball player and would like to meet you." And I said, "Wow." And I'm thinking to myself, man, where did I see somebody that I would have remotely thought was staring at me to even think that, right? But anyway, I said, "Look, I just got this news. Is it any way that we can connect tomorrow?" And she said, I'll put in that recommendation. So the next morning at 8 a.m., somewhere around that time, I get a knock on my hospital door. And I said, "Come in." And they push the door open and they roll in this beautiful blonde white woman. And she introduces herself. She said, "Hey, my name is Stacy, and I'm the one who thought you were a basketball player. And let me tell you something. I'm looking at her, and I can tell that she's several months down in her treatment, and I totally forgot that I had just been diagnosed." My whole thought process went to her. I was always a person who would like try to encourage someone, and my mom kind of instilled that in me. So I'm over here just pouring into her, totally forgot that I just been diagnosed, and connecting, saying, "Hey, when my wife comes, I'm going to introduce my wife to you. We're going to continue to share with one another. I'm coming to your hospital room. You come to my hospital room." And we made a connection, and I totally forgot about myself. And she lived, I want to say, a little bit over a year, year and a half. But let me tell you something. I had conversations with her. She accepted the Lord Jesus Christ in her life. And she forgave some people that she had some bitterness with. And we became really, really, really good friends. And I just wanted to make sure I interject that.
I'm sitting here with chills. We've shared it on the show before that everyone goes through their prognosis, their treatment, their journey individually. There is no one size fits all. There is no you do this and you get that. There is no, well, you've done this, so you should be doing that. Everyone is individual. And through that, everyone deals with it in their own way, right? Some people, like you said, you were on the word of Christ. Some people may like to do puzzles to get through it. Some people may like to binge watch Game of Thrones to get through it. You know, it's whatever you feel that eases your mind, your soul, and your spirit, right? We can't judge that. But whatever you do, if you are not able to only settle your heart and your soul, but then also settle someone else's, then that's a calling that needs to be exploited. That needs to be shared. That needs to be, you know, put out there. You are going through your own crisis, and here it is. You've now helped someone else go through theirs. Through someone that you weren't even who they thought you were. But knowing that you weren't that basketball player that she thought you were, she still found in you something better. She found in you a connection that helped her get through her journey. And for that, once again, to whom much is given, much is required. Yes. You have your finger on it. There's just something when you tell your story, and which is why I really wanted to have you on the show, because to your point, and you said it throughout the show, if there is someone that you can touch, if there is someone that can relate to your journey, whether it's through, you know, we're laughing and giggling at certain points, but maybe that is what they need to hear. Maybe they need to understand that, yes, this is what I'm going through, but I can also still be thankful. Yeah. I can also be comfortable in laughing. I can also be comfortable in opening up and sharing. Yeah, absolutely. Right? As long as you help one person, you've done your job. It. But we're going to try to help 1,000. Yeah. So for all you listeners, download, let your friends know, share it. Absolutely. Let's get it in.
One of the other things, if I can jump, because I don't want to forget this, because I know it's very crucial for that patient. I did 100 days straight in the clinic. Those of you who, I don't know what the procedure is like today, you know, it's so advanced now. Because back when I went through, it was 100 days straight at the clinic. So you have to get up, just the energy to get up, to go. when I look back at that, I'm like, wow, man, that had to, oh my God, thank God for.
Expand on that a little bit. You mean you had to get up to go to the clinic for 100 days straight?
Yes, I had to get up to go.
And what did you do at the clinic?
Once I've gone through everything and my numbers were, you know, where the doctors felt comfortable, now I'm doing everything outpatient. So at this point.
Okay. So you've had your procedure at this point.
Not my bone marrow transplant yet.
Okay.
But it's kind of leading up to. So they're doing everything, you know, trying to get me wiped out, all that good stuff to get prepared for it. Right. So I'm going to the clinic every day. Just so happened, my neighbors, look at how this was orchestrated. My neighbors worked at Northside Hospital. So they would come over in the mornings before work to pick me up, to take me down. And my procedure would be all day. Right. So by the time they got off, they would bring me back home. And I would wear a bag or whatever, right? So it's so important to laugh, all right? I remember I was going to that clinic every day, and I used to just kind of just go in there all, you know, just dragging, like, okay, let me go get this treatment. Well, one day I felt impressed in my mind to wear a suit to treatment. So I wore a suit the very next day, the treatment. And when I walked in, all the usual people that were there getting treatment looked up at me and said, "Jermaine, where do you think you're going?" I said, "I'm coming to get treatment." And they were like, "What?" I was like, "Yeah." I said, "I'm tired of coming in here dragging. Now I'm going to clean myself up and I'm going to come in and get treatment." I saw how it just rung a bell in some people's minds. Like, hey, wait a minute. We don't have to sit around here in a stupor. And then I met another white gentleman named Scott. Scott's mom and dad would come up just about every day at the clinic while he got treatment. And me and Scott became really close. And then Scott's brother would come in, and his brother was a jokester. I mean, this guy had us crying. And I mean, people that were getting treated in there were looking at us like, "Are you guys patients or are you just, what is the deal?" And, you know, when I look back at it, scripturally, again, it says, laughter is good like medicine, but bitterness rots the bones. When I experienced what I experienced with Scott and his family, oh my God, I was like, that is exactly what I needed. If I didn't get that laughter, my mind just would have been on all the medications that I'm taking and the potential side effects of those medications. Rather than think about that, I was over here laughing. So I just want to put that out there, because somebody's watching and you're at that point. You're in the middle right now. And I'm just telling you, there was a nurse that told me, she said her name was Pascal. And I don't think Pascal would mind me throwing her name out there, because I still talk to her today after 13 years. I remember I was having some procedure done and she said, "Mr. Reed, why don't you just get over what you're thinking about this treatment? Because there's a lot of people that go through this particular thing that you're about to go through and they never have to step foot back into this hospital." I'll never forget that one little saying that she said. I needed to hear that. Those nurses played pivotal roles. I remember this one guy named Kevin. I wasn't eating. I was barely eating anything. He came over. He would never really talk. He would just come over, administer the meds, and he would be gone. He wouldn't say much. This gentleman came over and he said, "Mr. Reed, I noticed you haven't been eating." And I'm just looking at him like, I can't even believe he's talking to me about something else outside of administering this medicine. And he said, "Can you do me a favor?" And I was like, "Yeah, what is it, Kevin?" He said, "Eat for your family." I said, oh, wow. He said, "Eat for your family." And I tell you what, even though I could not taste that food, I was eating that food like it was nobody's business. And when,
like a steak dinner with potatoes.
What? I had a Five Guy burger with all kinds of, oh my God. And, but see, that's another thing. I think today, I could be wrong, but I'm hearing that, you know, people don't lose their appetite no more.
I can't speak on that. I don't know, but I do know that there have, as the years go on, procedures change. And then once again, as we've said, people go through things differently. Yep. So it could be. Yep. I don't know.
I
can't
mine.
Speak on that.
Yeah.
But I definitely want to tap into just very, very quickly. You had the bone marrow transplant. They found your two donors, which is amazing. One was younger than the second, and you've gone with the younger one. And we've also said on the show that many doctors prefer stem cell or bone marrow from younger donors simply because, as you said, the younger the donor, it helps the patient to recover faster. Scientifically, this is what has been said. So doctors normally ask for a younger donor. You've had your process. Have you met your donor? Oh, Did you have an opportunity to meet your donor?
I'm going to get to that. Yes, I have met my donor. I met my donor a year after the procedure via Facebook.
Which is standard, via Facebook.
And then we had dialogue throughout the years. And in 2018, him and his family came through Atlanta and spent some time with my wife and my family here for a few days. And that was one of the most humbling experiences I've ever had, because I was so used to giving. Now I have someone giving to me. So I'm on the receiving end. And I just remember asking him, I said, hey, so what made you do it? And he was like, why not? I mean, you have a chance at saving someone's life. Why wouldn't you do it? And I said, well, what was the procedure like? He said, first off, I'm in the military and I was taking some leadership courses. And one of the courses was, have you considered joining the bone marrow registry to become a donor? And I want to say this was like 2003 when he did it. He said he did it there at the military and they sent them. I forget where they sent him for the procedure, but he went away, him and his wife. They paid for both him and his wife's trip, of course. They put him up in a hotel and he did the procedure where they go into the arm and do that particular procedure. And he said that the doctor told him to take Tylenol every 4 hours. He said he did that and he didn't really experience any pain. He just felt like he ran in a marathon. That's particularly it. So we are very close now. We've actually done some speeches together. We're looking forward to doing some more things together. It's just a blessing.
I love it. I can only imagine what that meet and greet was like and the fact that you guys are now friends. And I'm assuming we'll be friends forever. You guys share a common bond now. So that's just amazing, amazing, amazing. Yeah. I do definitely want to give you an opportunity to share what are, through your experience, not only your transplant experience, but in meeting other people, as you have shared your story and hearing what I'm sure are some stories from others who maybe share the same journey as you or know someone who has, what are some of the lessons that you've gained from this experience? Give me one lesson that you've learned or that you've experienced from this whole journey.
Wow, that's a great question. Gratefulness is what always comes to mind for me and not taking anything for granted. I really try to focus on that. You meet so many and you've met people that have had someone who did not make it, and that's tough to hear. So that's why you heard me say in the beginning, it's always operating in humility, and not operating in arrogance where this is concerned, but more in gratitude and seeing what can I do to help pay things forward, to help the next person survive, the next person make it that goes through this. That's my passion. That's my ultimate desire to see that. And I think being plugged in with Be The Match was amazing because through my passion of sharing my story, I was at a networking event for my job at one time. And I was mentioning, we were going around the table saying something about each other that someone might not have known. And I said, well, hey, I'm a AML leukemia bone marrow transplant recipient. And one of the ladies was like, wait a minute, what? She said, I used to work for an organization called Be The Match. And she said, you need to connect with a guy named Roger Gunn and get connected because African-Americans and minorities need help in that area. And I was just going on with my life at the time. And when she said that, it was like, oh, my God, that's my heartbeat. It's to help someone. What? Connect me, please. Hurry. I was like chopping at the bit to get connected. And when I reached out to Rod Gunn, and Rod, I still remember it as if it was yesterday. Rod said, "Jermaine, it is a pleasure to be talking to someone on this other line that's African-American and that has made it." Because it's several that maybe have made it but don't speak about their journey. And for you to be willing to get involved, I was like, "What can I do?" He said, "Would you be willing to be a volunteer ambassador?" I said, "Absolutely. Where do I sign up?" And that has been amazing to do the drive with you guys, to do the things that we've done over the years. You don't know how much that, you know, just really pierces my heart to be able to do that. You know, when I look back at my journey, one of the things I like to tell people, when I was coming through that, there was a passage that helped me just kind of, so many passages, but there was a passage that really came off the pages for me. And it was in Proverbs chapter 3, verse 7 and 8, where it says, "Be not wise in your own eyes, but fear the Lord and depart from evil. For it shall be health to your navel and marrow to your bones." When I heard that and saw that, I was in the clinic. And it was leading up to me having bone marrow transplant. And when I saw that, I said, "Wait a minute, I'm going to go to, I don't want to say I'm going to church. I'm just going to tell you what that meant. That really, really with all my heart helped me, because I felt like I had a right to it because I saw it."
There you go. I wish we could go to church. I'm sure this would be a whole another 2 or 3 hours that we would put together. But as we do wind down, I want to give you an opportunity. I understand that you're writing a book. So can you, and you know, a couple of words or sentences, just tell us what that book is about and when we can expect
thank you
it.
So much. It took a while, as you alluded to earlier. You know, you share your story throughout the time and over the years. And a lot of times people will be like, "Man, have you thought about writing about that?" And, you know, I was like, "Hey, well, now I'm just sharing it, whatever, whatever." After a great deal of thought, I thought about leaving legacy. You know, I made it this far. I'm grateful for how far I've made it. This year, I'll be 52 years old. When I went through this, I was 38 years old. You know, I want to live a long time, of course. But at the same time, when you write, it goes beyond the grave. And that's the thing, leaving a legacy for my kids and then leaving some intricate details to the patient that may go through the same diagnosis. And not only that, leaving some encouragement for the caregivers. A lot of times we don't talk about the caregivers, but the caregivers are so vital, so important. Mm-hmm. And I'm leaving that all packaged in my book. And I titled the book, "The Assignment, A Leukemia Story." And it all came from what I told you, meeting Stacy. Mm. Because after I had that conversation with Stacy and she was leaving my room, I heard that in my conscience. That's your assignment. So that's the title of the book. And I'm planning I'm slightly at over 100 pages right now. I'm hoping for about 68 more pages to get to a memoir and having it out this year. I'm just going to say this year. So,
well, you just put it out into the universe. So we're going to look for that around Christmas. I expect my signed copy, please. I'm plugging that in there right now to Tamara. I'll let you leave the rest.
Let me say this too before we go. Tamara, thank you very much for what you're doing in your role. I remember when you first came to be the match, I think you were coming from Macy's. Or you were coming from the retail world.
Yes, sir.
And to see your transformation of observing what you were about to get into, and then you evolving in the role and evolving in what you were called to do in your role, and you not knowing exactly the lives that you've impacted by a certain point, but you're doing a great work. Just continue to do it. Bless you. I really mean this from the bottom of my heart. This ain't, you know, I don't do nothing, you know, jokingly like this on an open forum or in person in private. So just thank you for all that you do. Really do appreciate it.
I appreciate that, Jermaine. And I'm grateful that you've acknowledged that here. And I think, honestly, we're going to try to reminisce a little bit. I think you and I actually met, I want to say it was the third week of me on the job. We went to, I forget the name of the college, but there was a conference, and you and I sat at the table.
Yep.
And I, like you said, I was observing. Yep. I had not, you know, learned too much, but, you know, I'm confident now that this is a mission to which I have been signed up for. This is my assignment. So thank you for 3 years. It was February. I started January 2020, but I think you and I were at the event in February of 2020.
Yeah.
It was definitely right before COVID. Yeah. So, yeah. Yes. Well, before I let you go, is there any last information, any last words of encouragement that you would love to give to our listening audience for anyone who, you know, might be going through it, has a family member going through it, or even, as you noted, a caregiver? Is there any words of encouragement that you would like to share
with
us?
Yeah, well, I'll just say this to that one who may be going through it right now. You know, what you see on this screen, you know, I didn't look anything like this, what I was going through with that. And here I am today. And I want to just tell you to stay focused. Keep people around you that are going to keep you upbeat. You don't want anybody around you with poor body language. You want people with energy that believes that you're going to come through this. You need that. If I didn't have that, oh man. And to that spouse that's there supporting your husband or your wife, your role is so vital. My wife did such an amazing job. And I know that she really put on her best effort when she was in front of me. Because I recall one time my mother-in-law told me, I'm so glad that you're home because your wife was miserable when you were not here. So that tells me that she was putting on her best effort in front of me. But when she came home, she probably wept, and which was appropriate to do. Do it away if you can, if all necessary. And to the caregiver, let me tell you something. That's your assignment, to do the things that you're doing now to help nourish. I was a caregiver for my mother passed. And I believe that's another reason, another key while I'm still here, because I did it with joy. I did it with strength. So just be encouraged, man. This is, you have an assignment. And when you come through this, you'll be telling your story as well. You'll be telling that next person that they can come through, and they will come through. So, be blessed, man. Be blessed.
All good tips. Once again, Black Blood Heals is here to provide resources, tools, and tips that helps you to be inspired, engaged, and educated on the importance of stem cell and bone marrow transplants. We hope that today's episode aided us in doing that. Again, we thank you for joining us today because, as I've always said and will continue to say, it will take all of us to save one of us. Thank you. Bye. Thank you for tuning in to Black Blood Heals. Head over to BeTheMatchBLK.org for more information on how you can join the registry and get involved.